This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to Saxo's Market Call on Wednesday, July 7, 2021. And I think we should start with the most important event happening today, Ole, right? And that is...
That is clearly not the FOMC minutes, but what's going to happen at Wembley Stadium tonight. Having lived in the UK for 20 years, I've seen the trials and tribulations of the English team, how they've been pumped up only to be falling back down again. Unfortunately, this time round, where they have a good chance, they have to meet the Danish team tonight. So I'm a bit torn. I'm not. I'm obviously hoping for hoping for a Danish win, but it really is a question if football is finally coming home to the UK, or whether it's actually heading back to Copenhagen like it did in the 90s.
I like Kasper Schmeichel's comment yesterday that it never really did come home, did it? And then the journalist was confused. Well, it did in 1966. Well, that was the World Cup, not the European Championship, which, by the way, England has never won. So, but let's see. It's going to be an exciting match. And it was a grueling experience yesterday between Italy and Spain that lasted way too long, but very exciting to the end, at least, with that penalty kick. So let's see who is up against Italy over the weekend on Wembley. Will it be England and Denmark? We'll be cheering for Denmark, at least. Ole, let's go into today's conversation. So I think if we start with equities on slide 2, the inflation trades were really unwound yet again yesterday. We had a plunge in the US 10-year yield, which you can actually see on slide 3. You have it right there. It's, you know, the lowest level since February. There was these classic talks about, well, the US economic growth is slowing down because you had the ISM services index missing expectations for June, but the market version of the composite index actually held up pretty well at 63.7. So I think it's just journalists grasping for random ideas of why this happened. There could be a lot of technical reasons for why it happened, but there it is. We have the US 10-year yield at 137 this morning here in Europe, and you know, what happened yesterday as well with that plunge in the US 10-year yield was that Russell 2000 plunged and you had the NASDAQ 100 setting a new all-time high on the close. And it wasn't a lot of our theme baskets that were driving this action, that's for sure. And we had a little bit of performance in the mega cap. So it must have been that long tail of the NASDAQ 100 stocks, not in our theme baskets and not among the mega caps that drove the action. Cybersecurity is really continuing its recent strong rally there. And then Samsung reported overnight in South Korea very strong results based on semiconductors, which we know is a very sought after component in the global manufacturing industry, and Samsung is definitely reaping the benefits of that. And before we go to the commodities, Ola, I just want to quickly just highlight, it will be very short, this whole, you know, the DD Global, which is the company behind the DD, which is the ride hailing service that you Uber Lyft you have in the US. It's the Chinese version of that. The stock was down as much as 25% yesterday, as Chinese regulators are clamping down or cracking down on DD Global over these concerns over privacy data that the company has mishandled and not been within the laws in terms of privacy data. And a lot of things is going on, I think, behind the curtain as well. I mean, the Chinese authorities, they really want Chinese companies to list in Shanghai, Shenzhen, or Hong Kong. You don't go to the US. But Didi did so, despite being warned 3 months ago, according to a Wall Street Journal article. They were under some pressure to do it. They did it, and now I think they're paying a price. And we've been saying for quite a while here at Saxo that our clients should avoid these Chinese ADRs. I think if you want Chinese exposure, you should, for the most part, try to go for the mainland A or H shares available across the 3 exchanges. And we have a lot of those available on our platform. That was a long intro, Ole, apart from football. Fine. So, but I think we should dive into commodities, because commodities is really where the action is. And on slide 5, you're talking about US yield drops.
Exactly, Peter, and I think actually you mentioned the yield drop there before, and you mentioned the reaction is in the U.S. stock market. But I think actually I wouldn't be surprised if one key driver for almost everything we saw yesterday across markets is a combination of several things, but not least the almost top to bottom 5% drop we saw in the crude oil price, because we saw some of these we saw some of the reflation darling, which is copper, which surged higher yesterday as crude oil rallied following that OPEC plus failure to reach an agreement. Copper came back down fairly quickly. Gold also struggled to move higher, found resistance and only to come back down again. But I think on top of all this, we also just have to remind ourselves we are now into the what I tend to call the silly season. It is the we are into the peak, approaching the peak holiday period in the Northern Hemisphere, basically meaning a lot of people are more concerned about what beach to take to drive to or what to do with your family instead of thinking about markets. And that basically means liquidity is drying up, volatility is going up, and that is, I think, is a key focus for us, thinking we need to keep in mind. So crude oil dropped. What was behind it? I think several things. First of all, the market was extremely overbought. I put out a tweet yesterday for the morning just highlighting some of these RSIs across the energy space, from oil and coal to coal and electricity and gas, all well into overbought territory. And we've seen some corrections across the board since then. But also, I think it's worth noting that even though we had OPEC Plus fail to reach an agreement, the risk of of a non-agreement is basically rising risk of non-compliance. Basically, that's producers basically say, "Well, what the heck? I'm just going to produce because we don't really have an agreement in place." So that potentially could add to even more uncertainty within the OPEC group. I think also White House urging compromise with gasoline prices, and that you can see that here on slide six. Gasoline price in the U.S. is now the highest level for this time of year since 2014. This is something. This is always a presidential killer. Gasoline prices is a key focus for many in the U.S. And at the same time, Biden's got a big problem because he wants to reduce U.S. production of crude oil, but at the same time, he's actually urging OPEC to increase production. So it's a bit of a catch-22 we're seeing there. So that's it. Now my spiel is getting a bit too long as well, Peter. But I think just finishing off with this with the drop in oil prices, it led to a correction in gold as well. But looking at where real yields are this morning, almost kissing negative 1%, it's lower now than it was around the time of the FOMC meeting in mid-June. It basically means that gold, on that parameter at least, is pretty cheap at these levels. So again, I think the upside focus remains. Keep an eye on that 1814 level, which I've highlighted as well here on slide seven. If we break, then 1833 is the next one to look out for. And if we should just take a look at the FX market as well. John Hardy is enjoying a well-earned rest. He'll be back next week. But I just put in the yen chart here on slide five because you can see we've been in this uptrend in dollar yen, weaker yen, for a while now. But with the yields coming down again in the U.S., we're seeing renewed strength coming into the yen, and it's quite critical because the yen is by now by far the most sold currency after the dollar. If you look at the IBM futures contracts, there was a big jump up until last Tuesday. So if we start to break below this 21-day moving average or even the uptrend, then we could see some additional fireworks from short covering in the yen. So keep an eye on that as well.
Yeah, and while you were talking, Ole, we just got news in from over the wire that China, according to sources, China is considering or is really working to close a loophole in Chinese securities laws that is going back from 1994, which allows Chinese companies, if they have a subsidiary outside China, if that company is selling shares, it can do so in foreign markets. And that's the securities law loophole that Chinese technology companies have been using. So you basically set up a company shell in Cayman Islands, for instance, and then it is that shell and not the Chinese incorporated company that sells shares in the U.S. And apparently, Chinese regulators are considering closing this. So I think we're getting to the end of this era with Chinese companies using U.S. markets. It seems like China wants to close this once and for all. So it makes sense. It's the overall strategy of China, self-reliance. You don't have to rely on U.S. capital markets for your capital. So, and it makes sense given the increased and continuous tensions between the two countries, which is basically, you know, a fight over who will be the dominant power in this century. Shifting gear from that very high level talk there, slide 8, there was a chart that was circulated yesterday on Twitter. It's a chart from Bank of America. It's a global investment strategy group. And they pull in this data. It goes back from 2005. They pull in data where you can see the equity allocation and portfolios among their private clients. And as you can see here, we hit a new record at the end of June at 64.8% equity allocation. A lot of that equity allocation rise, obviously, is just a drift. So you should put that much emphasis on it, particularly. But what I think is interesting, when you have a 65% average equity allocation, I think it could actually dampen demand for buying more equities going forward, because, I mean, to a certain extent, we are not all, you know, 25 or 30 years old that have 100% of our portfolios in equities. So when you get to, you know, an average of 65, at a certain point, you probably will begin to consider whether you have enough or you will blend it more with different types of asset classes. So this could be potentially a source of where, you know, private investors are maybe holding their buying spree a little bit. And then slide 9, it's actually going into the calendar a little bit, but we have a G20 meeting on Friday and Saturday in Venice, and the G7 global corporate tax deal, which sets the minimum tax rate at 15%, was accepted by 130 countries last week. And the French finance minister was out saying, I think last night or this morning to Reuters, that he expects the G20 countries to accept the and ratify the deal. There are still a few edges that need to be dealt with in the overall deal, which is planned to take go into effect in 2023. And as you can see, I've put in some highlights. So one of the things that are still in play is that Yellen actually wants to increase the global minimum tax rate from 15%. She wants to get it closer to 20%. And the 15% was basically to please countries like Ireland and Luxembourg and other low tax countries to get more acceptance. And then the EU is still working on the sideline on a digital tax levy on digital companies, because as we talked about in our Q3 outlook, Europe lost the digitalization technology vector to the US. So Europe is missing a lot of tax revenues because we don't have any big technology companies like the US. And the US, Washington, is quite frankly a little bit not happy about this. And so there were some high level talks about Yellen and between Yellen and Vestager from the EU Commission the other day. So let's see where this ends. But it's potentially a key risk depending on what comes out of the meeting minutes for trading on Monday, at least for the technology companies. So let's see what happens. And that brings us to the calendar, Ole. I don't think that's too much to say. I mean, the US JOLTS job openings report at 1400 GMT is obviously interesting because we have, I think, 9 million opening position, unfilled positions in the US. There's a lot of talk about, you know, these wage pressures and companies are not willing to give in and raise the wages of people are just staying on benefits. There's a lot of different talks about that, but it's going to be interesting to see whether that job openings series continues to expand. But then, and we have the FOMC meetings, but I want you to talk maybe a little bit about the EIA's short-term energy outlook.
Yeah, because we're entering the time of month where we get these monthly outlook from EIA this week, and next week will be followed by IEA and OPEC. I think EIA's most important number there is really to take a look at their expectations for crude oil production in 2022, because we've all seen the shenanigans within the OPEC Plus this past week, and one of the reasons why they're so laissez-faire is the outlook for US production not going anywhere. And last month, they basically forecast production next year to rise to 11.8 from the current around 11 million barrels a day. And again, we are well below that 30 million record we reached before the pandemic. So I think we'll be, so the market will primarily be looking to see whether the continued rally in prices this past month has led them to upgrade their forecast for shale and US production in general for 2022.
All right. Well, there's not much else to say. I don't think the calendar is that particularly interesting. We have the usual things on Thursday with initial jobless claims, etc. And then on Friday, I think the most important figure of the week is Chinese PPI, which is expected to come down and ease a little bit, at least on the year-on-year figures. So we'll be watching that closely. But we, Ole and I, will be back tomorrow, same time and place, and stay safe out there.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call or by email marketcall@saxobank.com.